There has to be good enough, and that's where the title comes from. As Adrian mentioned, the whole series was developed by John and Karen Louie, who we know and love dearly, and they are trained schema therapists. Dr. Jeffrey Young is the founder of schema therapy, and we'll explain a little bit more about what schemas are. But he himself has not got any children. And John and Karen came up with this program based on parenting, presented it to him, and this is what he wrote. In a world of too much information, Good Enough Parenting uses movies to teach parents how to meet core needs. Again, we'll explain a bit more what those core needs are. And at the same time, how to avoid passing down their own dysfunctional behaviors. Schema therapy has been successful with adults, but I've always wanted to see someone do something on preventing schemas or life traps in children, and here it is. What a commendation for the course. The core needs listed here, basic safety, guidance and protection, stable base, predictability, reasonable limits, love, nurturing and attention, empathy, validation of feelings, acceptance and praise, and spirituality. These are the basic needs that we as human beings need to have met in order to function. And then if they're not met, what happens? Children feel exasperated and discouraged, and life traps or schemas develop.
Can you hear? We're just having a little bit of work trying to get the speakers. The big speakers are not on. It's just these on the stage. But if you can hear, we'll carry on. All right, the Bible says in Colossians 3:21, fathers, do not embitter your children or they will become discouraged, in the New International Version. Fathers, do not aggravate your children or they will become discouraged. Don't come down too hard on your children, the message says. And so clearly the Bible talks about us actually not exasperating, coming down or hurting our children, which we can do. Now, if we don't meet those basic needs that Maureen just highlighted there, if we miss out on those and emphasize some against others, then we are likely to develop Jeffrey Young calls life traps. And these life traps are unmet needs. And we develop things called schemas. Things in our lives. You know, you react to something some ways. Have you ever had that? Right? Have you ever had, how many of you had, my dad used to say to me, if a job's worth doing, it's worth doing. Okay, sounds great, doesn't it? But if you hear that and that's all you hear, you develop a feeling like, I've got to do a great job for everything, and is it good enough for my dad? And some of us had dads who were perfectionists, and we grew up with a feeling like, I can never, ever do anything that's quite right or good enough for my dad. The life traps are deeply entrenched beliefs about ourselves and the world in which we live, and they develop, Young says, probably by the time we're 10 or 12. So this is why it's very important for us to think as parents how to help our younger kids particularly. And today is emphasizing more about younger children. The life traps are broad themes, belief systems made up of memory, emotions, and thinking systems. And you know, we can get our ideas about the world in which we live in quite wrong. And as we get new information, we can correct our beliefs. You know, it's like you have a map to live by. If you look at this map here, okay? Can we turn the lights out? Would it help if we just turn the lights in the hall out? This is a map. This is an Anglo-Saxon map from about 1,000 years AD. And I don't know whether you can work out where you live on there. Okay, well, it helps a bit if we turn it the traditional way around. This is with east at the north. So if we turn it around to having east in the proper place, you can actually start to see the British Isles in the top left-hand corner. That's because they knew most about that area of the world, and so they were able to draw that part accurately. The rest around the Mediterranean, around Africa, is all a bit sketchy. This is a map of the world from about 1500. And you can see it's a little bit more as we recognize it. And it's one of the earliest maps to have America on it. You can see there on the left-hand side, there's America starting to form. It wasn't until a few years later they started to do globes and realize that the world is actually round. And of course, we get to the point where now we look at a map of the world and we say, that's accurate, we understand that. All right? It's a bit like that with us. As we look at ourselves and think about ourselves, our old map was out of shape, it's out of scale. It even had some undiscovered areas because we didn't realize America was there. All right? And we get distorted life traps. And you find yourself looking in the mirror and you think, ha, I'm totally different from the way I am. So these schemas that we develop, these life traps, these maps, cause us to react in certain ways. And we develop coping styles to deal with them. We think of ways that we can just, well, that's just the way I am. I've always been like that. The first one is surrendered. That's it. That's just me. That's just me. Or there might be the avoidant type, which says, I don't talk about it. Change the subject. Or there might be the counterattacking type. It says, well, what's wrong with that? You know, what's wrong with that? I think it's a good idea. And counterattacks back. You might look at these cartoons or these situations. You know, the guy's saying, I told you to go and buy a 20-watt bulb and you got the wrong one. Why do I have to tell you over and over again? And the poor woman, the wife, thinks about what her mum used to tell her all the time. I told you not to forget your lunchbox. Why are you so stupid? So what does she say? Oh, she thinks I am stupid. And she says, oh, I'm sorry. She is a surrenderer. We've got this woman here. I don't like the fact that you don't support me in front of your parents. You made her look like a fool. I was only trying to help you see it from their perspective. And again, he thinks back to his overdominant mother that used to shout at him. And then he says, well, where are you going? Let's talk. Sorry, he says, and he goes off to the loo. I might be some time. How many of you have ever had that sort of situation? Actually, we put the toilet in there because sometimes it does affect the way you feel. All right, physically, when somebody challenges you. But let's just avoid it. Let's go in the loo. Let's get out of the way. All right? This is one drawn from Singapore. Honey, I was worried it's after 8 p.m. Again, the memories of a father shouting at him. You should be grateful I come home when I'm not out at the karaoke lounge, like all my colleagues. All right? He counteracts. He comes back. You should be grateful you married me, the counterattacker. Now, these three different styles of dealing with schemas are not the schemas themselves. They're a whole different thing, but the way that we deal with them. All right, let's have a look now. This is session 7 in the 8 series, and this is all about meeting the need for acceptance and praise.
Oh, it's a really, really important need to be met, this. Just think about our children. Is that what they feel? Do they feel accepted for who they are? Or is their experience a bit more like this? We're going to look at a film now. We've shown this once before in one of the previous sessions, and it's a particular favorite of mine. It doesn't need any translation, and you'll understand why when you start to watch it.
而我们通常都是假装在听，然后一边静，啾啾啾啾啾，另一边出。我们到底有没有听进去？他们不管，只要他们有讲就算了。你看奶奶，她讲了多爽啊！我看我们被淹死了，他们都不知道为什么。
唉，大人说了那么多话，为什么不明白？多了就很难消化的道理呢？有时候我们真想把话说清楚一点。
你看你还顶嘴，你话很多哦。妈妈教你是为了要你好，你还没大没小。我们用心良苦，是不想你走冤枉路。刚才我说那么多，
你明白吗？你为什么不说话？
你哑巴啦？对呀，说什么都要被骂，所以我们慢慢就变成哑巴了。
Oh, what a great film. We think all our words are so important, don't we? And they're just blah, blah, blah to our kids sometimes.
Can you see that okay? Do you read the subtitles? Can you read it? There are some blinds on these windows. If somebody might want to just go up and just see if they could be put down. half. It makes it easy to see the film clips. The Bible says, the tongue of the wise commends knowledge, but the mouth of the fool gushes folly. That's the verse that comes to mind as you see that clip and all the words. And I love the bit where he's just totally overwhelmed by it all. Proverbs 15 verse 30 says, a cheerful look brings joy to the heart and good news gives health to the bones. You know, the Bible is right in what it says about the way that we talk, particularly we talk about our children. You know, Matthew 23, Jesus says, woe to you, teachers of the law and the Pharisees. You hypocrites, you give a tenth of your spices. Yeah, mint, your dill and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. You blind guides, you strain out a gnat but swallow a camel. Jesus says you can concentrate on some things at the expense of others. He wasn't criticizing them for tithing particularly, but he was criticizing them for getting the greater matters of the law, justice, mercy and faithfulness. It's important as we think about our kids and working with our kids that we don't just focus on one area and forget other important ones.
What we're going to look at tonight is about the whole idea of acceptance. And we're looking at the idea of intelligence not just being measured by cognition, which is what we often do. So to look at our children and think about what are their strengths that I can accept and what are areas that I can empower them in. So first of all, the whole idea of multiple intelligence, what does that have to do with acceptance and praise? We need to find things to praise. Accept our children's strengths, basically know what they are to start with, and their weaknesses. Nurture the intelligences when we've discovered what they are, when we've identified them, to really nurture them. That, as you can tell, because you're all really intelligent, spells fan. So we want to fan into flame our children's strengths and be their biggest fan. Multiple intelligences. Our children have different gifts, different intelligences that we need to accept and praise them for. And some of you will be familiar with Howard Gardner, and he wrote a book called Multiple Intelligences, and he lists them. There are eight altogether. First one is logical or mathematical, and that's talking about how we use logic, mathematical processes, and scientific ability. Great example of this would be Albert Einstein. The second one is linguistic. It's also termed verbal intelligence, and that we see in its fullest form in poets, writers. My daughter's very pleased that we've got a picture of her favourite author up here, J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter. We've got modern day poets, rap artists also. The third intelligence would be musical, so the ability to understand, comprehend, and produce music. And that's connected to our grasp of rhythm, of pitch and tone. Some famous musicians here, Beethoven and Bach. More modern ones, we've got the X Factor. The fourth area would be spatial intelligence. That's the ability to form a mental model of a spatial world. We often think that men are better at this. It certainly is in our case. I have no idea, and you can see that when I try and park. But it actually isn't a gender-based thing. It isn't. It's just an intelligence that you either are strong in or not, in my case. Being able to move or operate using that model. And here's a little slide about that one. How do I find the way to the door? Seriously, if I'm in a building, if there's a broom cupboard to walk in, I'll walk into it instead of, you know, I'll just, no idea. How do I fix this computer? And the idea is here. Navigational skills, how to find your way around. And then we've got bodily or kinesthetic, the ability to solve problems or make products using one's whole body or parts of the body. A couple of famous footballers there, David Beckham, and Adrian put Steven Gerrard. Apparently he plays for some team called Liverpool or something. But tennis players also, Agassi and Federer here. And then we've got the naturalistic intelligence, the ability to recognize, categorize, or draw upon certain features of the environment. An example here of a tourist guide in Thailand feeling at peace with the world. Park and harbor design, landscaping, farming, all these kind of green jobs would have this kind of intelligence. Number 7, interpersonal intelligence. That's the ability to understand people, what makes them tick, what motivates them, how they work, how to cooperate with them, get along with them. And we see some examples of this here, chat show hosts here, Oprah and Parkinson. Politicians, you may argue about that, but they do have to at least be able to communicate to some extent and know what how people work. Intrapersonal, slightly different, that's about how we know ourselves, to know what we're feeling and to use that knowledge to operate efficiently and effectively in life. And here we have a picture of Dr. Phil McGraw. He's an American psychology-centric TV personality and author who is very gifted with that. We have gifted authors and helpers like C.S. Lewis. We may be familiar with his writings. Mother Teresa also had a very good understanding of how we work, how we think. Adrian's going to talk about when that need of acceptance and praise, if that's not met, what life traps could develop.
So it's very easy when you look back at those 8 different intelligences to think, well, normally we really only rate the logical one, Einstein. If you're good at maths and you're good at that, and you're good at school, that's IQ, isn't it? Not all these other things. And it's interesting to look at all the different areas where people can be very intelligent but they're not got great grasp of logic. I love footballers, but if you listen to them making comments after the game quite often, you realize they're probably not gifted in the linguistic department or, you know, in the logic department, some other thing. You know, hey, you know, that some of them are really great and a few go on to make, you know, pundit careers on the TV, but not all of them. And, you know, for the guy who wants to go off and be a naturist in Phuket in Thailand, you know, we've got to recognize that in our kids, that some of them have different gifts and abilities. And if we don't recognize that, if we're not in tune with that, they could possibly develop what we call life traps. Because we can easily develop a life trap called defectiveness. Not accepting your children's innate gifts may also produce the life traps of failure. Because you weren't good at maths, I was very good at maths. I've heard many people say, well, you know, they have to go to Cambridge because dad went to Cambridge. And if you don't get to Cambridge, you're not as good as your dad, and you've got to do that because I did that. All right? What do you get? You don't get to Cambridge. One of my daughters has recently graduated from Bristol, which is a fantastic university. She got a very good degree there. But she said, Dad, it's very interesting to see all the people who are at Bristol because it's next rung down from Oxbridge, from Oxford and Cambridge. And they're all miserable and disappointed to be there, because the expectations were that they were going to go to Oxford or Cambridge. And their parents regard them as a failure for going to Bristol. She said, I'm fired up because I went to Bristol. But you can easily get into a life trap of failure. Negativity, pessimism. That's what can happen to you when you are not acknowledged for your gifts. You know, they get into life traps of self-sacrifice. Well, I've got to do this. I don't really want to do it. It's not the kind of thing I feel talented to do, but I just got to do it because, well, my parents want me to do. And you may get a few glimpses of some of these life traps as we look at a few clips from a film called The Dead Poets Society. I don't know, how many of you have seen the film, The Dead Poets Society? Robin Williams, it was a great, great film. I think he actually got an Oscar for his part in it. He is a teacher who inspires some young men at a very, very good school in the United States to look at literature and to appreciate literary greats of the past. And one young man goes there, and his father is intent on him becoming a doctor. But he decides that that's not the area he wants to go in. And just look at this first clip and see if you can pick up any of these schemas, any of these points from this.
Father, I thought you'd gone.
Mr. Keep your seats, fellas. Keep your seats. Neil, I've just spoken to Mr. Nolan. I think that you're taking too many extracurricular activities this semester, and I've decided that you should drop school anyway.
But I'm the assistant editor this year.
Well, I'm sorry, Neil.
But, Father, I can't. It wouldn't be fair.
Fellas, would you excuse us for a moment? You ever dispute me in public, you understand?
Father, I wasn't disputing.
After you finish medical school and you're on your own, then you can do as you damn well please. But until then, you do as I tell you. Is that clear?
Yes, sir, I'm sorry.
You know how much this means to your mother, don't you?
Yes, sir. You know me, always taking on too much.
Well, let's go, boy. Now, listen, you need anything, you let us know.
Yes, sir.
What did you notice? Very, very kind, generous man. You need anything, you just let us know. What was he saying? You're going to do what I want you to do. All right? Don't you ever dispute me in public. No, it's a good idea not to train your children not to argue with you in public. But the way you don't ever dispute. Don't you realize how much this means to me? What? This means more to the father than to the son. he's the editor of the school annual. He's very interested in literary things. He's told you've got to forget that. Forget those extracurricular activities. You've got to focus on... And when you become a doctor, you can do just what you please. But until that, you're going to do what I tell you to do. And how did the boy respond? What kind of responder was he? Surrenderer. Okay. Okay. Maybe I was taking on too much. Okay, sir, maybe I was. All right, so he decides that he's going to surrender. Let's see how he gets on in the film. As the film goes on, he learns that he's got a real talent for acting. He wants to be in the school play. And let's just see what happens in the next clip.
Save some for me. But room fairy, here comes Oberon.
Father.
Neil.
Before you say anything, please
don't
let me...
Don't you dare talk back to me. It's bad enough that you've wasted your time with this absurd acting business. But you deliberately deceived me. How did you expect to get away with this? Answer me. Who put you up to it? Was it this new man, this Mr. Keating?
No. Nobody. I thought I'd surprise you. I've gotten all A's in every class.
Was it to find out? Well, my niece is in a play with your son, says Mrs. Marks. No, I say, you must be mistaken. My son's not in a play. You made a liar out of me, Neil. Now, tomorrow... You go to them, and you tell them that you're quitting.
No, I can't. I have the main part. The performance is tomorrow night.
I don't care if the world comes to an end tomorrow night. You are through with that play. Is that clear? Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
I made a great many sacrifices to get you here, Neil. And you will not let me down.
No, sir.
Well, I've made a great deal of sacrifices to get you here, Neil, and you're not going to let me down. All right? I don't care if the world comes to an end tomorrow. All right? How many of us have ever felt this, thought this, seen this in our lives and our parenting? I don't care what you feel. This is what you're going to do. Of course, his way of responding is to be an avoider, and he eventually decides that he will be secretive about things. And the Dead Poets Society is when they all decide as the boys to go and have secret meetings where they'll recite poetry to each other. Here's a little clip of them doing just this.
Tennyson. Come, my friends. 'Tis not too late to seek a newer world, for my purpose holds to sail beyond the sunset. And though we are not now that strength which in old days moved earth and heaven, that which we are one equal temper of heroic hearts, made weak by time and fate, but strong in will to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield.
You gain some inspiration from reading the poetry. To seek to find, but not to yield. Those of you who've seen the film know that he decides, I'm going to go on with the play. And I am not going to yield to my father's will. And I'm going to take part in the play. So this is what happens at the end of the play.
We be friends. And Robin shall restore amends.
Dad has been watching the play, and so he decides to take him home for a little chat. See if you can recognize anything in this.
Trying very hard to understand why it is that you insist on defying us. Whatever the reason, we're not going to let you ruin your life. Tomorrow I'm withdrawing you from Welton and enrolling you in Brayton Military School. You're going to Harvard and you're going to be a doctor.
But that's 10 more years. Father, that's a lifetime!
Oh, stop it! Don't be so dramatic. You make it sound like a prison term. You don't understand, Neil. You have opportunities that I never even dreamt of, and I am not going to let you waste them.
I've got to tell you what I feel.
You've been so worried.
What? Tell me what you feel. What is it? Is it more of this acting business? because you can forget that. What?
Nothing.
The need for acceptance and praise. He was good. He was very, very good. But what does his father do? I don't understand why you keep on defying us. You're going to be a doctor. What do you think of the role of the mother in this? Surrender. Very much a surrender. You know, I would encourage a lot of you mothers need to be stepping in when you see situations like that, even in your own parent, your own situations, your own parenting with your husband. If your husband's being too overbearing, then you need to have a word with him. Not just sit there, quietly suggest that we go off to bed. Right? The son is so suppressed by this point, he doesn't say anything. What do you feel about this? Oh, nothing. Nothing? Well, let's go off to bed then. Right, you can see here is a classic example of a young man who really needed to have acceptance and praise and have the skills that he had acknowledged. Those of you who have seen the film, this little section's a bit dark, will know what happens right at the end.
Neil?
Neil?
I'll look outside.
Rather than face up to a life being dominated by a father who doesn't understand him, he gets his father's revolver out of the chest of drawers and shoots himself. A sad situation. Talking to us about, you know, when things are not handled properly. The Bible says, you know, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. And in this case, it was enough anger for the boy to actually decide to kill himself rather than to face up to the situation they had round about him. What can we learn from this? Did the dad love the son? If you said to dad, you love your boy? He said, yeah, absolutely. How was he showing it? By providing all this money, providing a great place for him to be. Yeah, he loved him. But the truth is he loved his own dreams more. He wanted to live out his own life through his child. Right? Everything was about the dad. He didn't appreciate the son's gifts and his strengths. And instead of developing failure or negativity, the son decided to kill himself. If you can see anything in any of these clips that actually sparks off something in you, I'd encourage you to think very, very seriously about it. Let's look for a moment at the life traps that this kind of situation will generate. The life trap of failure. The core message of the failure life trap is, I am fundamentally incompetent and have failed, or failing, and will fail again in the future. I am less talented and successful than other people. You might be able to relate to that. It is one of my life traps. That is how I feel a lot of the time. I feel like I'm not talented. I don't have the abilities to do this. I'm going to fail. There is a sense of that. You know, the focus of this life trap is on achievement and external status and symbols of success. rather than on the internal feeling of shame and inferiority that is present in the case of the defectiveness life trap that we've covered in earlier sessions. You may develop negativity and pessimism. The core message here is, I'm destined to make serious mistakes that will result in big problems. Things will inevitably go wrong. Bad things will happen to me. I don't know if you know anybody like that, or you even felt that yourself. The negative aspects of life are emphasized to the expense of those things which are positive and happy. It's very easy to get into that situation if you've been brought up where people haven't recognized your talents and tried to steer you, and you know that you've failed and failed and failed at that because it's not your talent, it's not your intelligence. You might develop the self-sacrifice life trap. You know, the core message of this is, I must meet the needs of others before my own. I do not want to feel selfish or cause any pain to other people. You know, on the surface of this, it sounds really, really good. You know, it appears to be kind, but it creates problems in the long run as it results in imbalance in relationships and problems with unmet needs. We do have to have our own needs met as well. And we can get to the point where we will sacrifice everything for other people because we believe that's the way we should perform. That's what was taught us as kids. Let's look now at just identifying and nurturing these things in our children so we don't make the kind of mistakes that we saw in that film. Maureen.
So, what about us as parents? What's our job in this? Three things. Expose, basically know what those strengths are, know what the areas of weaknesses are, accept them, and then encourage. The at-risk areas, the areas where our children are weaker, not very strong, struggling. They need intervention. I work with teenagers who are not able to cope with mainstream school because they've got, a lot of them have got mental health difficulties, anxiety, eating disorders, depression, or the whole range of things like this. And so, As a professional, I need to intervene in that. I need to try and correct some of those things, encourage some of those things, foster some positives, bring them from where they are to somewhere further forward. And as parents, if we see areas where our children are at risk, we too need to intervene. Where their strengths are, where they're at promise, we need to encourage it. This parent in the clip we just seen didn't encourage at all. In fact, he just sort of negated it all, dismissed it all, and just highlighted the areas that he felt his son was not doing well in. So ideas for nurturing intelligence. With a mathematical intelligence, CDs, games, CD-ROMs, these are all available in the shops now. Hands-on manipulative type processes. Talk about numbers, counting, science, in daily life. The linguistic intelligence. Read to our children. I can't emphasize that enough. Many of you know I've got six children, a set of quads, and it was a challenge when they all came home from school with their little, you know, reading folders and all this kind of thing, and it all felt like they were bombarding. But even then, just to create the time one-to-one to read, even if it's just 10 minutes, read to them, get them to read to you, and that will encourage their linguistic intelligence. Foster a large vocabulary. That comes from reading, but it also comes from talking. And both of those areas will predict a future success. If you can get that done, any sort of early years, teacher will tell you, if you can get that done in the early stages, they'll do much better in subjects like English, essay writing, any of these kind of things in later school. Have family discussions. That can be at meal times. That can be any time. But get together as a group. I see it in my work where this hasn't happened. And a young person, they don't even know how to string a sentence together sometimes without lots of R's and buts and rights and everything else in there. Have family discussions. Family devotionals. Obviously, we know that they're really important for the spiritual well-being of our children. They're also really, really helpful for developing linguistic intelligence. You know, Adrian mentioned one of our daughters going to Bristol, and she has a real strength linguistically. She's excellent at writing and speaking. And we asked her once why that was, and she said that it was reading the Bible out loud in that group situation, having to read it to us, that really helped her. If you think about some of the ideas in the Bible, some of the words that are used in the Bible, they're not things that you would come across on a shopping trip, are they? And so for her, that really helped her develop in that area. So it's an essential area. So please, please continue to do that. Musical intelligence, encourage experimentation. You start off with the saucepans in the kitchen and, you know, everything, just the idea of rhythm and dance. In terms of teaching music, always encourage, never be a fierce teacher. If you're fierce in your training of a young child, you can put them off for life in an area that they could have been strong in. Sing together as a family. Again, family devos. It's a fantastic area to encourage this. Play beautiful music in your house, in your car, wherever you are. Different types of music will help this as well. Spatial intelligence, have an art area in your home. Kids love playing around with paints and pencils and creating things, don't they? And that's an area you can really encourage. Something that we kind of put in here now because it's not so common, this idea of providing an atlas early in life, maps. We're all into sat-navs now, aren't we? And you forget how to actually read a map. Talk about directions. You can use maps on the websites, things like that. And never, ever, ever discourage their artwork, no matter what it looks like. Ask them what it is if you don't know. They'll tell you. Bodily kinesthetic intelligence. Let them get dirty. It doesn't matter. It's good, that sense of touch and feel. Lots of outdoor activities. Crawling, climbing. It's not just for boys. Please let your girls get dirty and climb and crawl. Practice all sorts of sports. But for those of you who are sports fanatics, please let it be fun. Okay? Naturalistic intelligence. Encourage your children to grow a plant. I know our granddaughter, little Naya, keeps telling us about the sunflower that she's planted, and she's really, really excited about helping her dad in the garden. And apparently, she actually gave her mummy a lovely present of all his prized blooms the other day, which they weren't so encouraged about. But she loves being out in the garden and growing things. Help them to recycle items from their home. That's something that you can do very naturally now as you're tidying up. Visit parks often. Talk about the beauty of nature, the things that you see. And work that love of nature, that love of what we see, what God has made, into your family holidays. Ideas for nurturing emotional intelligence. The whole idea of self-awareness. What do you feel? Talk about that kind of thing. Self-regulation. Get them to, as they grow older, to be able to sort of talk to themselves, to set their boundaries. Motivation, empathy, social skills, these are all things that will really set them up well for life and develop emotional intelligence. Interpersonal intelligence, that means helping them, again, it's slightly similar, perceive or sense emotions. You can do that looking at stories, looking at expressions on people's faces as you're going past. What do you think this little girl is feeling? What about that daddy over there? Put a name to the emotion. How to manage them, to express them, but not always act on them. Use emotions to assist thought. Harness the emotions to stay motivated. Show empathy to others. And have good relationship skills that will all help them to get on in life. And then interpersonal intelligence. Monitor their social skills as much as their academic skills. Please. Academics are important, but they're not more important than any of these other things. The social skills, I would say, actually are more important. Value their social life as much as their studies. It's about balance here. And ask your children for their opinion I mean, that sort of links in also with the linguistic intelligence. Get them to talk, to express what they feel, and generally value what they say. And then praise specific comments or acts of kindness. And here we have some examples of people looking like they're happy and getting on well together. Encourage your children to talk to other adults. There's a sense in which sometimes we can encourage our children to play with other children, but then when you put them in a mixed situation, they don't know how to be. So equip them with that skill as well. Have friends over, be hospitable. I know Kim talked a lot about that to the women, involving your family in what you do, in your ministry. And again, that will help them develop empathy too. Foster independence. And we've got like cleaning their own room here. I still haven't done a very good job with this one, I'm thinking. But it's a good thing to encourage them, to measure what you feel their abilities are, and take a risk sometimes. Let them have a go and praise that. That will instill more confidence. Spend time at school if you can. If you can go and visit the school, if you're not working full-time or you get a bit of holiday, go and offer your services, assist. Schools are always needing people to help out, to you know, listen to kids read, that kind of thing. And you'll be able also to observe their interaction with others. Intrapersonal, create an atmosphere of openness. Listen, listen, listen. And you need time to do that. Give meaning attribution. Explain why a lot. Don't just give facts. Tell stories about the past, about history, religion, your life. And let them have free time. Sometimes we feel like we've got to super schedule our children. They actually need their own space too. Let them have an inner life. Tell the story of your childhood. Our kids love that. They love to hear all about the things you've done wrong, mostly, actually, you know. They love it. Talk about heroes, either in your life or just heroes, generally, people that you respect. Learn together about history, about the past. It's part of who we are. Visit museums, ballet, the opera, all sorts of cultural things like that that will really help them.
Thanks, Maureen. It's fascinating. Sorry for us talking about bragging on our kids at the moment, but as you know, three of them have just graduated. One from Bristol, one from Cardiff in biomedical sciences, and all the girls on, they seem to be girls on this course, all wanted to go on and study medicine. And we were fired up that Katie actually has been accepted to study medicine at Barts, and she'll come and study medicine. But we were there at the graduation. She introduced us to a lovely young lady. She said, this is, and I must admit, I forgot her name, but she said she's won, she got a first class honours. In fact, she got the highest degree awarded that year in any discipline, but in the medical sciences. She won a prize for the best dissertation. She got the highest marks in all the exams. I think she won four different awards and was Cardiff Student of the Year. And Kate said, oh, did he get in to study medicine? No, she said, couldn't get in. And I asked Katie after, I said, well, why do you think she didn't get in? She said, because, well, she said, she's not that good on the interpersonal skills. You know, we've often taught our children that you, sometimes in your life, you'll have to make an impression on somebody in 20 minutes. You know, when you want that job, and that initial interview, you have to be able to be good at the interpersonal skills. And a lot of times, we look at our kids, we see the emphasis on some kinds of skills and not on others. In even the way that we talk, don't we? When somebody shows emotion, for instance, what do we talk about? We talk about them breaking down. Oh, she's broke down in tears. No, she's expressed some tears. Why do you break down? You know, somebody shows emotions, well, they've lost it. Lost what? I mean, they're actually expressing the fact that they're feeling something. And what do? We squash it all down. They've lost it, broken, you know? I'm pleased that our kids are actually learn that. And it's one of the things that is really, really helpful in the church of being a Christian, to be able to relate to people. Chris was just telling us men, all right, to go out evangelizing, asking everybody we meet how they're feeling. Well, not quite. He said he does do that and goes, ask people when you see. You know, as men, it's not often the thing. You go up to another bloke on the street, he looks like he's, how are you feeling? Are you okay? Are you all right? But it's important that we look at all these things. So let's go back to the core needs. These are the core needs, and next week we will be looking at spirituality. Obviously, spirituality is a key part of all this, but it needs to be based on all these other things. You know, if your kids don't have basic safety, they won't hear what you have to say about spiritual things. If they don't ever hear any acceptance and praise from you, they won't hear other things. So it's important that we think about all these things collectively together. All right, today is about change. And I want to ask you, have you seen anything in that movie clip, or anything that Maureen has shared, do you think, well, I need to change this? Because what we want to do is to let this movie therapy, this life chat prevention, change your life. All right, here's a little clip from the actor who played the father in Dead Poets Society.
His family. And the father and the son had the kind of relationship that's in the movie. And at the end of the movie, the father was sobbing. And it changed his relationship with his son. It changed their lives, their relationship. That, to be a part of something like that, to be a part of something that can make people's lives better, you know, that's something I can be really proud of. And we should all be proud of people who are connected with this film, that it has, that it can have that kind of impact on people. That's the best, you know.
It's interesting, using the medium of media to help people change. We know that the ultimate change comes from becoming a Christian and applying the biblical principles, but it is amazing to me how many film producers use biblical principles in their films. And some of the most successful films you see are looking and they're teaching biblical truths to people. This is why I'm so excited about using movie therapy to teach people and to help people to see change. I'm going to finish with looking at a film called Kicking and Screaming. This is a hilarious film that some of you may have seen. One of those Hollywood films is extremely extreme and so very, very funny. And I like it particularly because as I grew up, I wasn't really on the sort of physical, the football-y, sporty side. I know you find that hard to believe looking at my physique. You can't believe it, can you, Tokes? And, you know, when I used to play football, they used to call me Auntie Mary. Now, listen, I'm not going to share these things if you're going to laugh. I mean, this is from the heart. You know. And yeah, or Andy Pandy. And I was never really, really good at this. And so I can relate to this first clip. And if you're not of a sporting persuasion, you might be able to too.
Control of my own destiny. And then I met my father.
You better be good at this stuff.
In college, I wasn't the most gifted athlete. But in order to please my dad, I strive to be the very best.
A little help, already out of control. I'm losing vision. Blackness. You guys, you might want to move out of there. I gotta let go of this thing.
Uh-oh.
For Pete's sake!
How far was that?
3 inches.
Hope you boys are ready. See you at the finish line. There's a rabid cheetah in lane two here.
Hunters, take your mark.
Exit! Ah! Wait! Ow! Ow! Ah! Ah! I got it! Right below my knees and up! Hold it!
No. Your day's over, son.
Yes, I was quite the athlete.
Oh!
So much so that I caught the eye of the prettiest girl in school.
Are you all right?
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem.
It's a horrible wind.
No, there isn't.
There is over there.
You know our love was meant to be.
Dad!
Hey, Dad, Barbara said yes.
Hey, son. This is Janice. I met her at the A&P.
Hi.
We're going to get married.
Can I talk to you? Alone?
Yeah.
Bring her back.
Nice to meet you, Barbara. Heard a lot about you.
It's nice to meet you.
She's great looking. What are you talking about?
No, she's terrific. You're getting married?
Look, Phil, I'm lonely. I'm a man. It hasn't been easy for me since your mom died.
She didn't die. She divorced you.
Tomatoes, tomatoes. Maybe.
1 year later, on the proudest day of my life, he was right there by my side.
There he is, your grandson. Sam, 7 pounds, 6 ounces.
Oh, by the way, he had a son on the same day.
Take a gander at your brother, Bucky. 7 pounds, 7. It's a little bit bigger.
Welcome to my life.
So, yeah, the ultimate competitive film has just been set up. Dad gets married and has a baby at the same time. So not only does he have a son, he has another brother, both of the same age, his brother Bucky. And this, of course, causes a few problems in the film. Dad coaches the soccer team that both boys are on. But because Will Ferrell's character's son is not so good, Sam is not so good, he's sidelined, he's put on the bench. And eventually he's sent off to go to another team. And we can just see how the character, I think his name's Phil, handles this. Can we just turn the sound up? Will the sound go up a little bit on the line feed?
Hey, Sam, you want to give us a minute? Need a little adult time.
Of all the asinine things my dad has done, this is by far the most asinine. I mean, I know he's the most competitive man in the world, but this beats them all. I am angry. I'm spitting angry. I'm like a tornado of anger swirling about. My heart rate is dangerously high right now.
I'm glad it happened.
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Where did my wife go? Are you a robot? Are you a robot, woman?
I am not a robot. Phil, honey, I know this is upsetting, okay? But you have to try to find the positive in this. It was unhealthy for Sam to play on your dad's team. Now he'll play for the Tigers and have some fun. Okay, look, you're too upset about this, so I'll tell him, okay?
No. I need to tell him.
Bench warmer?
Boy, did that hurt my face. Sam?
Yeah?
Hey.
Hey.
What are you doing?
Nothing.
Internet dating?
No.
Mail order bride?
No.
Just kidding. Look, got some good news. I got you put on a new team.
I'm not on the Gladiators anymore?
No. You're on the Tigers.
The Tigers?
Yeah.
They're in last place.
Yeah, but you're going to get more playing time.
Did Grandpa trade me?
No. Yes, wait. Gosh, I'm happy this has happened. This is a good thing. You know, it doesn't seem like a good thing, but it's a good thing. Because trust me, you do not want to be the kid that's on the other end of the bench. You do not want to be that kid. Because I know that kid. You don't want to be him.
Okay.
You don't want to be the kid who has such suppressed rage that his heart's about to burst through his chest. You don't want to be that kid. When he thinks about what his dad did to him, I know that kid. I know that kid lives right here in this house.
Mom!
Because he knows. Oh! Mom! He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't actually.
Okay.
Yes, good.
So, sisters, a top tip for dealing with your husband if he's hyperventilating about his relationship with his father. Give him a good whack across the chops. Ah, okay. So you see the situation. He's carrying all the suppressed rage with him. And he goes down to take the kid down to the Tigers. And he finds out that there's nobody coaching the Tigers. So he decides, well, he'll have to do it himself. And, of course, he ends up with coaching a team which is in direct competition to his father. And it's very, very interesting to how it develops. Just watch how it develops. Here he is coaching the team.
Let's go! Let's go, guys! All right, Tigers. Let's get ready to play, huh? I don't see any laziness there, okay? If we win this, we're in the finals. If we get a big lead, we gotta pummel these guys. We gotta pummel them at all costs. Dominate. And hammer them. I want you to play dirty if you have to, but don't get caught. Young son, stay low, okay? That's easy for you. Just chop block him in the back of the knee. That'll work well. Ambrose, you're big. Don't be afraid to throw the elbow. If you break someone's collarbone, that's a good thing. That's what the medic's for. Otherwise, he's just sitting around. All right? You hear me?
Hey, Phil. I don't think that's a very good attitude. You can't talk about hurting other players.
You don't think? I don't think you should be butting in when I'm talking to my team. You're my assistant, okay? You're supposed to back me up and go get me juice boxes when I tell you. Now go get me a juice box.
You know who you're talking to?
I'm talking to the juice box guy.
You're crazy.
I'm not crazy. I'm just thirsty.
Well, you go to hell. No, you go to hell. While you're there, why don't you grab me a juice box? I'm no juice box boy, I'll tell you that.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not. You're like your old man.
I'm not like my old man.
If it weren't for these kids, I would whip your butt.
I can take a punch.
I'm out of here. Bye-bye. I'll see you, Mr. Big Time Coach. Bye-bye.
I'm not like my old man. I'm a kind and gentle, compassionate human being. With a heart as big as a lion! We'll see you later, Juice Box!
Everyone wave goodbye to Juice Box!
Literally wave!
Do it!
Parents too! Everyone wave! Okay. Guys. I only want winners out on the field. Who's a winner? I said, who's a winner? Everyone's hand should be up.
I am.
Okay, everyone bring it in. Who are we?
Tigers!
What?
Tigers!
All right, let's break someone's clavicle on three. One, two, three! Break someone's clavicle! Hit the field. Let's go.
That's a trick, you know that?
Move it! Move it! Huh? Pick up that piece of trash, Tom. Tuck in your shirt. What are you doing? Have a sense of pride, huh? In fact, why don't you take a lap? Go run a lap! I'm timing you. Pick it up! Faster!
Here we go!
Bellissimo! Yeah. Oh. Oh. Right there, right there, right there! Good, good!
Later, progressive bitch.
Go on, go on, go on! There we go, John Piero. Look good.
Think you can mark it?
Yeah, I can take it.
JJ, Zach, everybody see what we got to do with these guys? It's 4-on-1, 3-on-another, right? We really have to smother them.
Hey, Larry, come here!
never drinking coffee as long as I live.
So he won. He's in the final, but what is he losing? His son, okay? It's a very, very good example. It's a stream example that we can all laugh at. But there's something that you can see in this and think about it, particularly for yourselves, particularly men. The rage that he has inside him is all pent up and developed onto the football field, and now he becomes the most unreasonable coach you can possibly imagine. Far worse even than his father. Let's just quickly see what happens at the end.
That's the half!
Honey,
this is halfway through
where
the final.
Have you been? I called you twice. Why isn't Sam in his uniform?
So it took me all morning to convince him to come, and the only reason he is here is to support his team.
Well, he doesn't want to play for me?
He would love to play for you, Phil, but you've turned him into a bench warmer. Sound familiar?
Look, I just wanted to get to the championship game.
Well, you're here, Phil.
Frustration.
Don't worry. We'll be all right. We'll be all right.
If you play the second half the way you play the first half, I'm going to trade the whole team to the Tigers.
Can I go in now? I have fresh legs.
Billy, I can't. It's a championship game, all right? Don't bother, okay?
I didn't play the week before either.
I promise you I'll play you next season, okay?
You want to be gladiators?
Yeah.
Let's say we are gladiators.
Second half. Doing okay? I know this is tough.
Hey guys. Sam, you think I could talk to you?
I guess.
Honey, do you mind? So I just was thinking, grown-ups are always telling kids how they mess up, right? Truth is, sometimes grown-ups screw up, but we don't have anyone to tell us when we do it. I screwed up, Sam.
You think?
Just got caught up in everything. I really lost my way. I mean, I apologize. I just want to ask you if you can find it in your heart to forgive me, and you give me a second chance, I'd like to make it up to you.
Okay.
You accept my apology then?
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy. All right. You're starting the second half.
Really?
Yeah.
You're not worried about losing the game?
No, I'm worried about losing you.
I brought your uniform just in case.
So go suit up. Okay?
Good job.
Thanks.
Now give me that jacket.
Oh. Bad.
Horrible.
Okay. Hey guys, everyone take a seat if you would. I have something important I'd like to tell you. Just want you guys to know that I know that I blew it. I completely blew it. And we should have just been having fun all along, and honestly I don't know what happened. And I owe all of you an apology. I'm very, 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 very sorry.
With a capital S and a capital R-E. You know what I mean. You guys are great kids. You're unique with your own strengths and talents, and I should have been promoting that. Instead, I wasn't because I'm a lousy coach and I didn't teach you anything.
That's not true, Dad. What? He tried to kill me. He taught us exactly how not to play soccer.
Actually, Sam's right. That's exactly what I did. We just need to take the field and you guys just do exactly the opposite of everything I've taught you. Does that make sense? What have I told you to do?
Always play the Italians.
Okay, there you go. Giampiero, Massimo, we'll get some fresh legs in there, give you guys a rest.
Rest?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Grazie. Thanks.
What else have I taught you?
Break people's clavicles. Chop long.
Tattoos are cool.
Don't remember that one.
Coffee is a lifeblood that fuels the dreams of champions.
right. Hold on. What else?
The most important thing is winning?
No. The most important thing is having fun and trying your best. All right? So let's get out there and do everything the opposite of what I've taught you. Sound like a plan? Bring it in. Here we go. What are we going to do?
Go visit the field!
Take the field. Here we go, guys. Have fun!
Down by one, the Tigers have both Italians sitting on the bench. Odd move by Coach Bill Westman.
Stop it, guys!
Goal! And the Tiger goal is hard!
Oh my. That's it. That's the intensity I've been looking for. That's it.
The Tiger goalie looks okay.
Injury? Time out.
Coach Westman out. Is taking no chances.
With glasses? Can I borrow your glasses? Fine. You look like you need those. You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Just want to do a little vision test here, all right? Is that better or worse?
Worse.
Better or worse?
Worse.
Better or worse?
Better.
Oh, put those on. Let's go, guys.
All right.
Come on. Okay. You okay?
Play resumes. Gladiator still dominating the field. Wow! An amazing save by the Tiger goalie! Tigers with the ball. Mark Avery kicks the ball up, catches it on the back of his neck. The rest of the Tigers are forming some kind of wedge.
Mike, do win them all, Mike! Those down.
Mark Avery leads the league in least amount of time played.
Hey, keeper!
Yeah. Ambrose, what a powerhouse kick!
Let's go, guys. Stay focused.
Every time you say something back to me, it makes me love you more.
I can't believe this. Hunter is tearing down the field. And he kicks the ball to Jack. Jack takes the ball into the corner. Wait a second, what's going on? It's like they're forming some sort of mega person. A header by young son from Ambrose, shoulder for a goal.
Way to go, Big Bomb.
It's not legal. It's not legal, man.
Great hustle. Jump here, I'm hustling. You're back in.
Okay. Remember, share the ball.
Okay.
Right, team.
Okay.
Yeah, good, good, good.
Okay, guys.
Times are back in. Massimo steals the ball. Less than a minute left to play. The Gladiators are completely out of sync here. The ball goes to Ambrose, who fakes.
Watch it, it's a try. Stay with the Italians.
You're gonna have to get past old Uncle Bucky for this one. Something your dad never taught you.
So it all ends happily ever after. But what did you learn? It's never too late to say sorry. Although Hollywood sometimes portrays things in extreme ways, you always find that your children, if you sit down and apologize to them and being honest with them, are very, very gracious in accepting that apology. He realizes he's turned into his dad and he turns everything around. And there are some times we have to sit down and tell our kids, we're actually teaching you the way not to behave. You know, when I got really angry with that driver in the car on the way to church, that's not the way to behave. We had a little incident coming along today, and there's a car, a very, very nice Jaguar coming up on the inside and squeezing. Then there was a cyclist in the way, and he wanted to squeeze past, and I sort of stood my ground. And Maureen said, what are you doing that for? You know, I said, well, I'm just feeling like you shouldn't be doing that. I looked in my rearview mirror, and there's Mark and Dawn Akinlade in their car behind. I thought, whoa. You know, sometimes, you know, when you feel challenged, you actually got to turn to your kids when they see you. So you actually got to learn to do life not the way I've taught you. I've actually taught you the wrong way. All right? He taught them to play football. Of course, the conclusion to this is that you too can change. That we could all change things in our lives. If there's something you've seen in your parenting today, even in your marriage relationship, if you feel like you're a tornado of anger just waiting to burst, you know, you need to talk about it and to work on it. And we need to focus on going away now, thinking about meeting our children's need for acceptance and praise. The next session we're having in Movie Therapy, Good Enough Parenting, is next Saturday night, and it'll be at Dragon Hall, where the other sessions have been held. I encourage all of you to come along to that. There are notes for the previous sessions. If you come along, we can arrange for you to have back notes for those. You'll find all the information in Good Enough Parenting absolutely fascinating. Did you want to say anything in conclusion? Okay, that is the end of the session. I'm required to show you the names of the clips and the fact that they all have been licensed by the movie Motion Picture Licensing Corporation. All right, let's have the lights up. We've got about, I don't know what time it is, we've got about 30 seconds for any questions on that. Can we just get the lights raised up? Good. Question. Toby. Hey man, thanks, Tobes. Well, we can talk about that more in detail. I think what we see in the Bible is Jesus using parables and stories and ways to relate to people.